Okay, so this is a two-for-one. I submitted the paper on risk perceptions, and then it ended up in this session on secondary task engagement, so I'm going to give you two-for-one. We're going to talk about secondary task engagement and crash near crash from naturalistic study, and then from our survey research association of perceived risk with driving and driving skills with teenage risky driving. You want to see that again? Cute, isn't it? I have no disclosures. So the purposes here are to examine in study one the likelihood of a crash near crash or crash risk of secondary tasks. Okay. The second study is based on our survey research with in a naturalistic study. So we're going to compare survey responses to observed naturalistic data, two measurements, kinematic risky driving, and then a self-report measure of checkpoints risky driving. So there's two studies. I'm going to give you all the methods now for both of the studies, and then we'll look at study one, and we'll look at study two. Okay, so there are two naturalistic studies that I'm going to report on. The first one is the now famous 100-car study conducted by BTTI. I did not conduct this study, but I did analyze these data. This was a 118-year-old and older high-mileage drivers. And the point of the study was to evaluate the risk of, or the causes of crashes and near crashes. And then the second study is what we call the naturalistic teenage driving study, where we recruited 42 newly licensed teens, and we followed them for 18 months. In both these studies, we used the same measures, at least the naturalistic measures. So we did continuous collection of accelerometer, GPS, and video data. So we put cameras in the car. We put a little measurement contraption in the car. It had cameras in the car. It had a GPS and an accelerometer. It had a radar on the front. All of this is connected to a computer that we put in the trunk of their car, and we continually record it. We don't look at it at the moment, so it's not real time. We download the data every once in a while. If they're doing something really stupid, then we have to do an intervention. But otherwise, it's strictly observational. And the beauty of this is two things. One, you get an objective measures of risk. That is, very high elevated G-force events can then be looked at to see what happened, and we can label them as a crash when vehicles crash, or a near crash, which is a close call. And the reason that we include these near crashes is because even though these are terrible drivers, these teenagers, they don't crash that often. But they do have a lot of near crashes, and we can combine these, and there's some evidence that suggests these are similar. And of course, if you know anything about flying airplanes, a near crash is treated very, very seriously because, you know, it could have been a crash except for the last minute maneuver. So we're treating the same way here as with teen driving. And then with our 42 teens, we did surveys, and we asked them about, and we did that surveys several times, three times, at 6 months, 12 months, and 18 months. So this is unusual. And we asked them about their risky driving. So this is self-reported checkpoints risky driving with 19 items that were like, how often in the past 7 days did you speed, go through light on a yellow, wear a seatbelt, etc. And then we ask about perceived risk, 14 items, how much risk for a crash if you, blah, blah, blah. And then finally, we asked them about driving skills. How skillful do you think you are? We figured that these things would all change and be correlated with the outcomes because they've been looked at in a lot of other studies. All right, so those are the methods. You got it? This is what a naturalistic study looks like, the inside of the vehicle. And what you have is cameras that are at that look out from the car at the rearview mirror. There's a little contraption there, and you have a camera that's looking forward and a camera that's looking back, so you know what's going on. These cameras on the overhead, there's also a camera that looks down at the driver, and then there's a camera that looks at the occupants of the vehicle, which is a still that we take, as soon as the vehicle starts up, we take this blurry still so we can see who's in the car but not identify them personally. We got that through IRB. And this is what it sort of looks like if you're in the lab coding all this stuff. And you can see here is the face of the driver. You can see whether they're looking at the road. You can see who's in the vehicle. You can see in the bottom left, you can see what they're doing with their hands, so you can look at distraction. And you can see if there's safety belt, and you can see the forward and rearward view, so you know what was going on with other vehicles when this event occurred. Is this amazing data or what? I mean, this is just so mind-boggling. And of course, the problem is there's so much data that the art form is to reduce the data and make it and encode it, the stuff that's useful. All right, so here's the data on study one. So we're going to look at secondary task engagement and crash near crash in a case-controlled design. And the way we do this is you identify all the cases of crashes and near crashes in our teenage sample. And these were all events that were above 0.65 G. If you've driven on a test track and tried to make the vehicle do 0.65 Gs, you can't do it. This is a totally emergency kind of thing. It's not a simple thing. If you were riding in the car and the driver slammed on the brakes and you would lean forward, that's what a 0.65 G force would be like. Okay, so these are all the cases. And then we had the controls. We randomly selected non-crash, near-crash road segments. And the sampling was done within subject. And it was based on how much mileage they took. But it was basically one segment per every crash, near-crash. Or six segments for every crash, near-crash. And so here what you have is the analysis, which is an adjusted random effects logistic regression, which is adjusted for mileage and adjusted for the correlation within individuals. But the way you calculate the odds ratio is you have the prevalence of a secondary task during crash near crash. Every time there was a crash near crash, was there a secondary task? What type of secondary crash was it of? Over the denominator, which is the prevalence of secondary task engagement in these non-crash events. So it's a classic odds ratio kind of thing. All right, this is the only data slide. This is amazing. I think this is amazing. I don't know. It's my research, so I should think it's amazing. But anyway, here we have the 100-car study, and these are the odds ratios and the confidence intervals, and these are the secondary tasks. And what you see for our adults is the only risk for a crash was dialing a phone. Now, these data were collected 8 years ago. A lot has happened in 8 years. So, in fact, they did not text enough for us to even calculate a good estimate. However, dialing a phone worked out to be a 2.5 times greater risk of a crash near crash. Okay. Now, with our young drivers, we find a lot more significant risk and a lot higher odds ratios. So texting, dialing, reaching for their phone, which we found is very common, reaching for other objects in the vehicle, and staring at roadside objects, and eating were all risks. Okay. So these are the same tasks that teens were doing that were riskier than things that the adults were doing, okay? So, before I leave this slide, what you see is that talking on a phone versus an objective measure crash was not risky. In fact, it was slightly protective. Now, I'm not saying that talking on a phone is protective. In fact, I'm sure it's not. It's not a good thing. As a bicycle rider, I'm scared always when I see a driver with a phone because I know they're not looking. You know, so I'm not saying that talking is a good thing, but What can we conclude? One, risk was greater among teens than adults. There were multiple secondary tasks that took their drivers off the road that increased crash risk. So let me go back. Texting, dialing, not so much talking, reaching for an object, reaching for a phone, those are all things to take your eyes off of the road. Okay, so we think that's a bummer. We found that talking on the phone did not increase risk, but that dialing, texting, reaching for a phone increased risk, so findings are consistent with policy restrictions on phones. So I'm not saying that we can discuss that further, but I think our data are consistent with the idea that taking your eyes off of the road for any length, that those tasks are the most dangerous, and that these things are more dangerous for teens. Why might that be? Maybe teens are just not as good at these tasks, or maybe they are not as good at selecting when to engage in these tasks. But that we'll have to wait for later. Study two. So this is by way of providing evidence that looking at kinematic risky driving. So these are elevated G-force events that were not crashes and near crashes, but they are like sharp turns, hard stops, fast starts, yaw, which is overcorrection. And here what I'm showing you is that for our overall 18-month crash near crash rate, the 18-month kinematic risky driving rate, this is the average events per 10,000 miles, was correlated at 0.52. So not perfect, but it's pretty good. And that each one, T1 kinematic risky driving is at 6 months, 12 months at T2, and then at T3 is at 18 months. Each of them are correlated pretty well with 18-month crash near crash. And one of the reasons this is really strong evidence is because a lot of crashes, you know, are not due to the driver. They're chance events. What this suggests, and we've done other research that looks at this, that shows that the rate of kinematic risky driving in a particular period with these teen drivers well predicts the likelihood of a crash or near crash in the next month. So we have predictive validity. Then in this next column, we have the kinematic risky driving just shows you that they're pretty consistent across individuals by when we measured it. Okay, so that's evidence that this kinematic risky driving rate measure may be useful for looking at these perceived risk and so on. Now, we're also going to look at risky driving. So we measured it at 6, 12, and 18 months, and here are the correlations with kinematic risky driving. These are, you know, significant at 0.05. And so there's something about reporting that in these cross-sectional and to some extent prospective relationship between self-report and kinematic risky driving. However, in this slide, what you see is two measures of risky driving: our objective measure of kinematic risky driving, elevated G-force events, and our self-report, okay, at 18 months. And here we have measures of perceived risk that I told you about at T1. Not, you know, it's in the right direction. It's negatively associated 0.24, so it has the higher risk perceptions, the lower kinematic risky driving, but not significant and not associated with kinematic risky driving. And it's true, all these associations are in the right direction, but they're not very powerful, not very strong. Self-reported driving skill, it didn't get monotonically better. Driving skills were at their lowest the first 6 months. They were actually middle level in their first 6 months. They got lower in the next 6 months and then highest after 12 months. So I guess that's consistent. But the point here is that they were not associated with kinematic risky driving. They were negatively associated, as you might expect, with risky driving, but not in a significant level. So what we get is evidence in the right the expected direction for these relationships, but not very, very strong. So, what do we conclude? Perceived risk wasn't associated significantly with, I didn't show you crash, near crash, but those associations are really very low. I think the best way to look at it is with either the self-reported or the kinematic risky driving, and we found associations in the expected direction, but not very strong. What are the possible explanations? Well, there's been a lot of research on perceived risk, and you heard a talk just now on a cross-sectional survey, and I think Ray is going to talk about risk perceptions. Why are we interested in risk perceptions? Because we're all desperately finding something we can change, some individual individual variable that is mutable that we can address in intervention. And perceived risk, it's probably certainly one of the most well-studied, but if you review the literature, you get about half of the published studies show an effect, and most of those are cross-sectional, and a lot of them are self-reported intentions and so on. And another half, or maybe not half, but a lot of other publications show no association. So is it that there is no true association, or is it that perceived risk captures different constructs than kinematic risky driving and self-reported risky driving? This is the conversation we were just starting earlier, where when you ask somebody, how risky is it? Most people might say, well, it depends. It's risky under these conditions, not under those conditions, but we don't really have those kind of questions. We say, how risky is it? So it just may be that the perceived risk captures something, but it's not something that really relates to this. The other thing is, especially in cross-sectional surveys, when you ask about perceived risk, you're getting a sample of what they're thinking that is also associated with their perceptions or their actual driving behavior. So this is sort of an interactive thing, so you would expect there to be reasonable correlation, but is it predictive? Unfortunately, we don't find any evidence of predictability for risk perceptions. We went into the study, we were going to do sort of cross-lag analysis. We thought that perceived risk would be associated with our driving outcomes, and our driving outcomes would over time be associated with these perceptions, but when there's not an association, you can't do that analysis. So that was not possible. And I want to recognize my many collaborators. Thank you.